Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success, your weekly look at the 1993 and 2008 Phillies, and indeed the 2018 Phillies as well. I'm Liz Rocher, managing editor of The Good Fight. With me is my co-host, Justin Clue. Justin, are you alive?
It's not really a podcast about that anymore.
Not really a podcast about being alive.
We say that, but it's not even really a podcast anymore. It's just a rant. That's a bitch sesh.
It's an endurance test.
There's microphones in the room for.
Oh my God. Yes. So we're here to, let's be honest, mostly talk or bitch about the 2018 Phillies, such as they are. But you could also catch more of our voices and the voices of John Stolness on the various other podcasts we do for the Good Fight podcast conglomeration. Let's just call it that. I don't know. You know, lump? Are we a blob of podcasts? But yeah, you can catch John on Hittin' Season. He does a Friday episode? Friday episode and a Sunday episode. We are here for you midweek. For your midweek Phillies fix. If you are here with us listening, thank you. The Phillies aren't the most interesting or good, in quotes, good team right now. So thank you for joining us today.
Season ended last night, which is primarily what I believe we're going to focus on today in this conversation.
Yes. Last night, the Phillies played their second game in a day against the Washington Nationals, and it was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
I'll say this on the podcast. I said to my fiance, Sean, I said, they have a 3-run lead at 6-3 in the seventh inning. And I pause and I'm like, I don't feel like they're going to keep this lead. I feel like they're going to blow it, but I'm not going to tweet that. That is too negative. I don't want to be every time I tweet something, the Phillies do the opposite. I'm just like, no, this is too negative even for me to put out into the world. And then they fucking did it.
Yeah, they did it quite. If you're looking at those two games yesterday, obviously as a fan, it was, I want to say gut wrenching. It's weird just because you're expecting it. You still don't want it, but as a fan, it was, you know, obviously disappointing. But narratively, I don't think there could have been a more perfect two games played yesterday, honestly, for this team, for everything that we think they're going through, for everything we know they're going through, for all the weird little narratives going into yesterday, J.P. Crawford's role on the team, Gabe Kapler's management of the team, what the team does and doesn't have at the end of what was supposed to be a really key rebuilding year, playing against the Nationals, a team that gave up and is doing better than the Phillies by a lot. The players on the Nationals and the examples, their young star sets that I want to get into, that was just a perfect reminder of the kind of consistency the Phillies don't have. I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah.
Having a lead, giving it up, losing in extras at home where they played so well earlier in the season, losing the first game because of poor play and an absent offense. I mean, yeah, let's get into it, because if I just list everything, it'll go by real fast.
Yeah. I mean, my main issues were with Gabe Kapler's management in the later latter part of the game. I mean, we're going to get into J.P. Crawford. We're going to do a whole thing about Gabe Kapler and J.P. Crawford. But my main issue with last night was the management. You know, Sir Anthony Dominguez had a great inning, and he, you know, he had a scoreless inning. He's had, I think, coming into last night, it was five straight scoreless outings. Last night would have been sixth. I think the runs that scored belonged to him, because Gabe Kapler did what he did that we've criticized him for, sending a reliever out for another inning after he had a good inning before. It's not like they have 15 relievers on the team right now. They have 15. They have an enormous bullpen. Their bench is still small for some reason, and yet Gabe Kapler sent Sir Anthony Dominguez out for another inning, and he loaded the bases.
He walked so many. I mean, that second inning, the contrast between those two innings, which as you said, is not the first time we've seen that, exemplified that he's at the moment not a pitcher you want to rely on for more than one inning, and that's not his job to be relied on for more than one inning. And for somebody who had so many pitchers at his disposal and somebody who was so liberal with replacing position players throughout both of those games, it was baffling why he felt like that was the right call. I guess some equation came out of the glowing tapestry on the wall from which the Phillies glean their in-game moves, but I don't know. I don't know how that I would be interested to learn what exactly told him that was the right thing to do when it has not worked so many times in a row.
I don't get it. I don't understand why he does that. I mean, I have an idea. This is a team that is, I mean, for as much as we have wanted them to be very stat minded, I feel like they've now gone the other way, and that there is no, everything that dictates what Kapler does, it's all stats, it's all matchups, it's all numbers. It's not, okay, well, you know, he had a good inning, he should end it on a good inning, let's send one of our literally 8 billion relievers out there instead. Maybe we shouldn't send Luis Garcia out there.
I love that.
Thoughts?
Luis Garcia sent out from the second game to once more face Trey Turner, and only Trey Turner, and once more walked him just as he did in the previous game. I mean, again, small sample size, but that was pretty cool.
Luis Garcia, I have his stats up in front of me. In his last 5 appearances, he has an 18 ERA. 18. 5 appearances, 2 innings.
Oh, yeah.
And in those, like, that's how bad he's been. I saw him come out last night, and I couldn't control myself. I yelled at the screen, why? Why? You could dive into the Phillies relievers as if they were a giant pool of Scrooge McDuck coins. That's how many there are. And yet, Luis Garcia still shows up. He pitched in both games. And in the first game, from what I can tell, I did not watch the first game. I was at work. He walked someone, pitched 0.0 innings, walked someone, and then left the game.
Yeah, that's what you fill that bullpen with arms for, baby.
Like, where was Hector Neris, who's been half decent lately? You know, where's anyone else? I mean, Pat Neshek appeared, I know, and he was great. It's not working. Like, you can't do a baseball, you can't manage a baseball team based entirely on numbers. You can't do it.
I mean, even just,
we're watching that happen and it's not working.
Even just looking at just the simple numbers here on Sir Anthony Dominguez and pitching more than one inning in a game, he's thrown, when he, among his appearances this season, he's got 47 appearances, and 31 of them, he's pitched more than one single inning, at least, you know, at least a third more. In the innings where he's just pitched one inning, he has 8 walks in 31 games. In the 16 games that he's pitched more than one inning, he has 11 walks.
Oh my God.
But I will say, in the games where he's pitched 2 full innings, he's only allowed 1 earned run and 1 walk and 3 hits. And most of that came in one game. He's only done that 6 times. But, you know, maybe those are the numbers Gabe's looking at. But at the same time, this marriage to analytics that's clearly, like, running the team, isn't this exactly what he said what you know, that conversation with Padnishek, the stuff that happened in the first series of the season, isn't that what, like, he supposedly adapted? And he talked so much and was so encouraging to the people listening that he would say, oh, I'm open. The biggest thing we need to do is remain open to all ideas and open to change and open to evolve. And it seems like we've gone back to exactly what the issue was earlier in the season, which anybody who's been fighting in these old school versus new school analytics versus gut feeling baseball debates, which are at this point useless and boring, anybody who's been participating in those for the past, you know, decade or so that's been going on in baseball knows that debate is no longer a debate, because the answer is there's a healthy medium. There's both play a role in managing a baseball team, certainly. So any sort of blind adherence to one or the other is going to run into trouble at some point. And clearly the Phillies have run into trouble. And I think it's easy to see that it's in large part due to their blind allegiance to this one management style. Like there's just no way you can look at numbers and allow that to run your entire baseball team and dictate all of your decisions. You just can't. Sometimes you just got to look at what's common sense.
Yeah. I got into a small fight with my fiance last night because he was angry online, a shock about the people saying things about the Phillies he didn't like, which is, you know, literally my life. So we got into a fight because he said, you know, of course, you know, I don't necessarily believe that things are better. We're better, you know, at the end of last year than they are right now. And I said, I don't actually agree. At least things feel worse. And that might not be truth. That might not be truth. It might not be supported by fact. But you look at the end of last year, at this point last year, you were looking at the team and thinking, look at the potential. They've got Hoskins. They've got Crawford. They've got Williams. They've got Nola. They've got, you know, we didn't even know, like, Sir Anthony Dominguez was not even a glimmer in anyone's eye. He was still a starter.
That Michael Franco would be effective was like a hope. And he's been one of the few players who has come through. So imagine like that scenario and then being told, yeah, and get this, Michael Franco doesn't suck for most of the second half of the season and is like an effective player. You're like, wow, that's another piece. That's incredible. I saw someone tweet the other day, like, why can't just one day before the season's over, let's get Hoskins at first, Kingery at second, Crawford at short, and Franco at third. And let's just see that infield once, you know, let's get the vets off the field and let's just see that version of it that we made up in our heads last year one time, just to see what happens.
I've started in pieces writing sort of a you know, an end of season postmortem. Just, you know, I'm jotting down random thoughts, but the thing that I keep coming back to is 2018, a feature or a bug, is what we're seeing with players out of position, the slavish dedication to you know, everyday matchup stuff, you know, beyond, of course, Hoskins is always going to be where he is for the most part, you know, and Cesar Hernandez is mostly going to be where he is. You know, is this what it is? Is this the future? Or is this just we're trying it this year and, you know, we kind of got ahead of ourselves because it looked like we were going to compete and, you know, now we're sort of stuck between two worlds? Because it feels like that's what they are. It's like they didn't come into the season thinking we're going to really super duper compete. We're just going to get through this. You know, we added some pieces to make ourselves look more attractive for Bryce Harper and whatever. But like they were in first place for 39 days and it got to their heads and they're just adding stuff. And now they're sort of confused. Like I'm genuinely concerned about what next year is going to look like, because I don't want to spend another year watching Scott Kingery play at shortstop and listening to Gabe Kapler actually say with his mouth and his words that Scott Kingery is better there. Not even with his words, with his actions. He's putting him there. JP Crawford would be better at third base than Asdrubal Cabrera. He was kept out of the game last night for Pedro Florimon.
I really don't understand.
Who ate up a ball or let the ball eat him up late in the game. Cabrera also had a bobble. Things that Crawford would not have done. I am underneath a blanket right now. because I don't want to put up my podcasting urine. My hands are just, I'm like bopping the blanket. It looks like, you know, two possums are fighting under it, probably from the outside.
The outside of that blanket. Yeah, just to hear what's coming out of it and what looks like underneath. That's brilliant.
I care about this team more now than I did, you know, 2 years ago. I've always cared, but, you know, you care more when there are people, you know, are players there that you see potential in. I have never been this frustrated. It has been a long time since I've been so frustrated and angry.
I don't want to say confused. I mean, there's so many things to complain about regarding the team right now. But the people who so like confidently say like, well, Crawford's not in the lineup because he can't hit. I don't understand.
I want to murder those people.
You can see the same things. Somebody who's not playing is obviously not going to get better at hitting. Somebody who hits so well, previously is going to need to develop and get playing time to get better. Obviously J.B. Crawford struggled in the minors. He struggled in the majors. But never in a way that made you think that never for long enough, just because of the passage of time has not been large enough yet for you to decide, oh no, that's over. He's over. Like the Phillies top prospect for all these years is done. We're done with him. He's played 30 some games in the majors and now we know what we need to know and we're done. I don't understand how the Phillies can think that. Obviously fans are going to think that because their memories are broken, but like that on top of the idea that not hitting somehow keeps you out of this Phillies lineup, which is one of the worst offenses in all of baseball. When you just said Pedro Florman's always our go-to example, but Scott Kingery has sucked for most of the year. Carlos Santana has sucked for most of the year. Who on this team has been a good hitter for the entire year? Who on this team playing one of the amalgam of positions that J.P. Crawford could theoretically play is really blocking him? As Dribble Cabrera got here and his batting average dropped 60 points, you telling me that's going to keep J.P. Crawford out of the lineup? That doesn't make any sense. It's silly. I don't know what this vendetta against Crawford, where that came from, both from the team and from the fan base, but that's useless. That doesn't help anybody. I mean, at the very least, this season was supposed to be about experimentation, and he was one of the biggest experiments to get out there, to see in action. Like, all right, let's see what this kid can do. Well, he got hurt, so that didn't help. And I think two of the biggest tragedies this season are that it was a lost year for both Crawford and Scott Kingery, two of the young players that the Phillies clearly wanted to build around, parading Crawford around in the offseason with Rhys Hoskins as if he was like a new face of the franchise as well, and giving Kingery that deal out of spring training. That was clearly saying, like, these kids are the future, so get ready for more of them. And then, yeah, like you said, this team doesn't really know what it is at this point. They kind of like made some moves just to make them. I mean, I guess you can say at the time the moves they made at the trade deadline were not terrible moves. They were like, okay, well, that makes sense. They want this. That makes sense. They need this. But then just the way that they didn't play out, and then the way that the veterans that they acquired have been used so much more as if they need to be at this point in the season with the team struggling the way they are. It's been bizarre. It's like they're trying to be – we talked about how they're a rebuilding team all year long, and that's an inescapable classification. The contending team was not necessarily going to happen. It did happen. It stopped happening. They're still a rebuilding team. And I know that's a confusing place to find yourself in. Like, okay, what steps do we take here? Especially at a moment like the trade deadline where it was like, do we add to this? Do we embrace this? Or do we continue on the path and hope that this team is rebuilds in a really positive direction, much more positive than we would have imagined? I get that's not an enviable place to find yourself in. It is better than being like, all right, we still suck and we don't have any good players. Let's go find some good players. But at the same time, yeah, it's kind of created this situation where the fans don't really know what they are. The team doesn't seem to know what they are. And it feels like there's a lot of different contesting voices dictating who is getting playing time, who is in the lineup, who is hitting where. And it doesn't seem like anybody knows what their job is. It doesn't seem I could see that shot of the team after the second loss last night. They looked absent. They looked like they just weren't part of baseball anymore. And you don't entirely blame them because they've been sort of scrambled about all season long, especially the young players we're talking about.
It's not their fault. It's not their fault. This is what we were told, that this is they wanted so much flexibility. Mm-hmm. Who cares what the players want?
Yeah, and honestly, I think that crossed my mind last night. Gabe Kapler, his system may not be an ineffective way to run a baseball team. this team doesn't have the depth to be a Gabe Kapler run team. This team doesn't have like one star, a couple of crappy players, and then for the most part, like mediocre, totally effective tools in the toolkit. Like a lot of guys who, okay, I need this guy because he's a good base runner, and I have this guy because he can come off the bench and hit a home run. I have this guy because he provides solid defense up the middle, and I have this guy because he can cover more ground in the outfield. Like everybody having different roles and deploying them in the way that he sees fit. He seems to just be jamming square pegs and round holes most of the time. Like this team just doesn't have enough good players for him to be like, I have 39 players that I can use in any role. Well, no, you unfortunately don't. There's this team being in the state that it is, that's also hurting the amount of young players who could benefit from seeing more regular playing time, from who could get into a groove or see more consistency if they weren't part of a system that was like, let's go crazy and turn every baseball game into like juggling. So watching the Nationals yesterday and seeing how effective their young star in Juan Soto was a solid reminder of, oh yeah, the Phillies don't really have a guy who's young and great and clutch and consistent and playing every day. They just don't have that guy yet. And I mentioned that on Twitter and people like, well, Nola's a star. Like, yeah, Nola is a star. Nola's not going to clear the bases when they load the bases. Nola's not even going to play every day, obviously. He's a big piece. He's the one reliable piece they've had all season long, but he's not the kind of star I'm talking about at the moment.
No, and he can't put the team on his back and carry them.
No.
Like, that's what they need. Like, right now, they need a Ryan Howard who says, everyone get on my back. I'm taking us there personally. That was what, 07? When he, I think that was that 07? Where he was just like, we're all of us here. I'm going to do it.
Get me to the plate, boys.
And he picked everyone up and literally just dragged them all across the playoff line himself. Mm-hmm. And they don't have anyone who can do that. I don't think anyone even feels empowered to do that. Everyone's dejected and sad. And part of it is that, they're playing like shit. But, you know, this is a team that, as it's constructed, either as a roster or as Gabe Kapler is putting it on the field, that is somehow less than the sum of its parts. Yeah. And that's really upsetting. This is not how it should be. Like, you pick up Gabe Kapler and you give him a team like the Braves, and I think he probably wouldn't fuck it up. I think he'd be fine because he has dudes he can keep in the lineup every day without question. He's got, some decent pitching. You know, he's got guys that can hit. You can do stuff with that. This is a team that's difficult to do anything with. And so I guess, it's a little... It's not fair to be totally, completely critical of Kapler, but he's also doesn't seem to either be A, learning from his mistakes, or B, willing to change what he's doing in any way to fit the team he has.
Right. And Kapler's the face we see down there, so it's easy to heap it all on him. But this is clearly an organizational decision, philosophically, to move in a direction this. And there are also combating voices. I mean, what today there was... more departures from the Phillies minor league system administratively, and we've already seen Joe Jordan depart. So clearly there's some sort of organizational differences in opinion, I would say. We're seeing
this is the start.
I think they're going to be.
I think this is going to be the start of a huge. I think we're going to see just a flood of people leaving the minor league system. I think we're going to end up seeing a few major league coaches changed out.
And this has to affect next year and the years to come. And John Middleton, how much he's going to have to pay a free agent to come here after seeing a situation like this, like, oh, come to Philadelphia. We finished in like second to last place after being in first place. There's a very public debate about our reliance on statistics. And people, administrators are leaving en masse because they disagree with what's going on. So, yeah, come on down and become a part of this. Maybe you'll play every day. Probably you won't.
Now, I want to get into Kapler and Crawford in just a second, but I do want to, you brought up John Middleton, and I want to talk about him for a minute because he's the one that drives everything. And John Stolness tweeted earlier on Wednesday that, you have to wonder how worried is John Middleton about what he's seeing. He put probably on the field what he thought was an attractive, interesting, and decent team. and they got good, and a few more people came to the ballpark, and then they got real, real bad, and now people won't shut up about everything. Now, he's not a, I don't necessarily think he's a guy to act irrationally, but I have to wonder how much longer he'll let this go on. If he thinks that the management and the front office and whatever else is driving people away from the team, that it, for whatever reason, for either lineup construction or the weird words he says into microphones that are completely disconnected from reality or whatever it is, I have to wonder how long he'll let it go on before he says to McPhail, you've royally screwed this up. Fix it or get out.
How secure do you think Gabe Kapler's job is, honestly?
I was thinking about that this morning, and I'm torn between thinking Middleton is probably on the fence, and I'm almost completely certain that Klentak and McPhail are completely behind him.
Yeah, I think it would be really tough to get rid of him after only 1 year, but I think I agree with you. I think that the idea is in some people's heads in the organization already. And it's interesting, like back when, you know, the team was only starting to struggle, it's funny, like the reaction sort of graduated from, oh, the players need to get better, we need to fire the hitting coach. And now it's like, I mean, some people have been after Kapler all year long, but now it's like, all right, well, this has to be a question because the team has been so bad and it's so largely linked to the way he runs the team. And him being like the face of the team, in a way it's like ornamental, like a hitting coach, but at the same time it's also, if he went away, McPhail and Klentak would still be there, so the philosophies would still be in place. I don't know, I guess they would have to just make like a choice that was less dramatic in their carrying out of what they dictate as the way to run the team. But at the same time, yeah, I don't think and I don't know, I mean, how do you personally look at it? I was encouraged by how open he was to change and just like learning from his mistakes and what worked and didn't work. But again, that's what it feels like we've lost in this last month of the season.
Yeah. I've said a couple of times that you can sort of tell by the moves he makes when Kapler is clenching, when he feels like something is about to slip away, when things are not going the way he wants. You can tell by the moves he makes, the 8 million pitchers he used in game one, the shortness of the bench, because he's like, all right, well, I'm going to throw everything out at it because the numbers say this, and so obviously I should do this, you know, despite, you know, using, you know, conventional wisdom about handedness as opposed to, you know, drilling down into extreme stats and looking for matchups. I feel like that's what's been happening. I feel like when things are going well, Kapler's like, yeah, sure, I'll listen to whatever you want. When things are going badly, he's holding on to the team with both hands, white knuckled, looking for literally anything he can do to change it. Now, it's like a duck, smooth on top, paddling crazily underneath. You can't really tell. I feel like you can sort of tell when he is losing it. And the negative part of that is that he's just like, it's not that he's not open anymore. He's just like, yes, give me everything. I'll take everything you have, all of the information, give it all to me, and I'm going to put it in my brain, and out will come this decision that's clearly based on numbers and not at all based on my stress about everything that is going wrong right now.
Yeah, it's like stress eating, but with a roster. You just got to like everything in the fridge, get out, yeah, and get on the field. This is happening. And last night watching, I know I've mentioned him already, but Juan Soto in that second game last night built a 3-0 lead all on his own. Then he went ahead and hit the go-ahead home run in extras to make it 7-6 and ultimately led to the Phillies losing. He passed Ken Griffey for what, the number of home runs for a teenager to hit in the major leagues in a single season or something? Yep. Something of that nature.
I was going to mention that earlier. Yeah, he's like the youngest or the first teenager to hit 3 home runs or something.
Blah. Yeah, and you're just like, wow, this division's going to get really hot moving forward. I mean, you know, it won't be the most, it won't be the sexiest division in baseball, obviously, not with the Marlins and Mets around, but it's not going to be the Phillies just for the taking in the future. And this was a season when they could have taken some steps forward, and they just don't have a Juan Soto. And to watch him orchestrate that victory, not all on his own, but really, you know, be the foundation from which that win was built for the Nationals was just, I mean, it was just perfect. It was perfect. The only way that game could have been more narratively perfect is if J.P. Crawford had come out and actually hit a walk-off in game two and won the game. Like, that would have been the slimmest of silver linings to be like, oh, look, the guy they never play won the game and also had a double in the first game. Seeing him hit that double after not seeing him for so long was, I will say, very satisfying. It doesn't tell you anything more than he hit a double on that pitch, obviously, but it was just, you know, in a vacuum, very satisfying to see the guy that's being utterly abandoned by the team and the fans come out and be like, look, I can hit. I hit a double. I hit an extra base hit, something this team is, you know, apparently incapable of doing when it's not a home run. So, yeah, it's I feel like every one of these issues feeds into the others, and it's so hard to not just like fall from one into the other when you start going with this team, because last night was just a perfect encapsulation of a lot of things that are wrong with them.
You have to, I'm like, you have, everything is connected. You know, everything is connected. And this is, I mean, it's been easy to be so comfortable with the team the last few years when they've sucked because nothing really mattered. But now, you know, I remember thinking at the beginning of this year, I'm like, this is when everything matters. Like, this is when the things that they do actually start to matter in the long run. We're going to see what this front office is made of. We're going to see what management is made of. You know, and I don't know if I've been terribly encouraged by it. You know, it's only a year. I'm not damning anybody, but it's, you know, this offseason is going to be really telling as far as do we all jump on board and make the best of what we've got? Or, you know, do we do the other thing, which is continue to be, I mean, we're always going to be critical of the moves they make. That's part of our job at The Good Fight, to look at everything critically, but it was so easy to jump on board with this team at the beginning of the season, having very little other than the players themselves to go on. And now we have information about Kapler and his management style. We have information about the front office and the moves that they felt were appropriate. You know, I agree. I don't think the moves that they made were bad. I think the way Kapler has used them are bad. And the degree to which this is coming down from them, it's hard to know. I don't know if they would have hired him if, you know, he would have done what, if he would be doing things that they didn't want him to. So, you know, there's a lot more to being an enthusiastic Phillies fan. There's a lot more barriers to just jumping on board and being like, yeah, I can't wait. Like getting Bryce Harper. Yeah, that's a reason for me to be excited. But even that doesn't really erase my concerns, especially since I feel like if they sign Bryce Harper by midseason, he's going to pull a Papelbon and strangle the manager in the dugout in the middle of the game.
If they signed Harper, it would go a long way in erasing a lot of people's problems. We were saying that now. We're living in the moment now. Actually, I was going to say, ask something about that. Like, obviously, you know, remember that first weekend of the season, everybody was like, oh my God. And then like when the team went into first place, it was like, yeah, this team is good. And now we're having this conversation. When the season is over and we're able to zoom out and sort of see it as one entity and not a series of like phases and streaks and slumps. I feel like, do you agree with the idea that it's impossible to not view the season as a success antagonistic as that can sound in a moment like this, because this was always inescapably a rebuilding year, which means a lot of learning. And even in failure, you probably learn more from failure. So we now know more than we knew about a lot of players and about the manager than we did when the season started. So in a way, it was a success because you can make moves based on what we learned. And with no playoff expectations when the season started, it's really not all that disappointing to see them not make the playoffs. It's just more that the dramatic way in which they have blown this and the way that they probably could have salvaged a bunch of these losses into wins if maybe they had been managed in a different way, or if players hadn't disappeared entirely and hadn't been so streaky. You know, they probably, you know, we were talking about a different team. But, I mean, do you feel like this season, no matter what happens, is a success because at the end of the day, you learned a lot? I mean, it's just tough. It's tough to use the word success with this team right now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you can learn. We've learned a lot. Whether the Phillies feel they've learned the same things, whether those are things they already knew, whether they even matter to them, whether those are things they're going to care about and use in the future. Like, I think the Nationals are going to pass this team by the end of the season. Sure. I think the Phillies are going to end in third. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you from the beginning of the season, I'd be like, yeah, I guess that's all right. If they're able to hit a 500 record, that's about what I expected. But I don't know if, you know, as someone who's said a lot of times, you know, like this was a successful season. Look at everything everyone's done. If you look at it from a purely player perspective, I don't even know if you can say that anymore, because they have screwed up with J.P. Crawford. They have, I think they've really hurt Scott Kingery's development. I think playing Hoskins out of position is a huge mistake. I think Carlos Santana has been a disappointment. I think Jake Arrieta has been a disappointment.
I would agree with that.
Because that people were fighting with me about that at one point. I'm like, this is not the Arrieta that they signed. This is the Arrieta that exists. This is there are two Arriettas. There is crazy good Arrieta. And then there's this Arrieta who is, you know, the Arrieta we've seen is like a third starter, fourth starter. And that the Phillies need more. Phillies could have had more. Phillies could have gone out and gotten Cole Hamels instead of Asdrubal Cabrera. But no, that is not the world we live in. And when you look at the things they could have done, the things they didn't do, the things they did instead, it's hard to look at this season as a unqualified success anymore.
Yeah.
You can't just, it's really difficult. And that makes me sad.
It's like, I guess the idea of learning things is a success, but what we've learned is such a bummer that in hindsight, like with the Cole Hamels thing. Yeah. I mean, if they had signed Cole Hamels, his numbers at the time would have resulted in a lot of people complaining about that deal. But obviously his numbers after he went to the Cubs would have people not complaining and absolutely thrilled that Cole Hamels is back. And, you know, he's being a really good starting pitcher for the Phillies. That would have been surreal, honestly. That would have been terrific. And this team might find itself in a different place. But, you know, that's at this point neither here nor there. This is the track we're on, unfortunately. Yeah. And, I guess you might not be able to call this season a success if that really is your goal, until years from now, when you see what this overall season did. And I mean, I guess that's the sign of a team that's really struggling by raising more and more question marks, is that you have to zoom out further and further to determine the length of time that you could spin this into a success. Like, I'm not trying to spin it
20 years from now,
but we're talking about development in baseball here. It's a glacially paced exercise. So, you know, a couple of years from now, when we again are looking back with hindsight, maybe some of the moves they made and didn't make this season turn into whatever. But at the same time, it's tough to not look at this season as extremely disappointing, and not because they don't make the playoffs, but because things went from bad to good and back to bad. So again, we say it all the time. This is what development looks like. But you can't shake that voice that's telling you, did it really have to look like this?
Yes. Well, and speaking of, did it have to look like this? Let's talk a little bit about Gabe Kapler and J.P. Crawford. J.P. Crawford has been back with the team for a while. I'm trying to remember when he was recalled. You can't really look at the game log because he's had like a grand total of 3 at-bats since he was recalled, since he came back from AAA.
It was 5 days ago where J.P. Crawford was optioned to... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was when Hector Neris was recalled.
Yeah, let's see. I think I could probably find it. But it's... He hasn't started a game. He's had just a small handful of at-bats. One of them, he hit a double, which is super awesome. But it didn't... That was in game one of yesterday. It didn't earn him a start, which seems bonkers. And Ben Harris of The Athletic, either he asked about him or someone else asked Kapler about Crawford. And I'm going to read the whole quote, and then we're going to break it down piece by piece. Good. All right. So the question was, do you expect JP to get much playing time or a start here and there, especially with some guys banged up? Here is the answer. I think that's a really good question. I'm thinking about it every day. I'm looking for opportunities to use J.P. Crawford. He's so talented, and I think we're going to be depending on him so much in the future that we want to get him looks. On the other side, we have some infielders that have performed really well, like Scott Kingery. And Scott Kingery has been a really good shortstop. No. I had to stop because there were question marks shooting out of my eyeballs.
he's really doing that thing where at first it was like, oh, Gabe Kapler's too positive. Yeah, he's really positive, and it can be grating sometimes, but at least he's not just making shit up. And in this case, with the "we're in a really good place to strike" comment and now saying Scott Kingery has been a really good shortstop, we want both of those things to be true. Sure, sure. But you can't tell me that, like, the kid who's played in 133 games this season is hitting .228 and is not providing a natural shortstop's defensive prowess at shortstop has been a really good shortstop. I mean, come on, that's just it takes a sideways casual glance at very basic statistics to refute that point.
Yeah. Oh, there's more. So here's more. We acquired Asdrubal Cabrera to play the infield and play it well, and he's gotten some big hits for us. Franco is now coming back, and he's been successful for us throughout the season. Cesar Hernandez is our leadoff hitter tonight and has been an important part of our offense. So it's not as easy as, quote, we want to get JP a look and just put him in the lineup, quote. It's more, does he give us our best chance to win tonight? And if not, how can we deploy him off the bench? And do we get to that situation? So those are things I've had conversations with JP about, and the guys who aren't playing regularly, and we just have to figure out ways to get them sharp, because that one moment is going to come, and it's going to come with something in the line, and those guys need to be ready for it. Fuck you.
What does actually the last part of that mean? I'm sorry. My eyes glaze over a lot when he's going on one of those spiels.
Because it's all coach speak, only it's like weird Gabe Kapler coach speak. Like, this whole thing is so, it's obviously just spin. It's just spin for something. I've said it before. Ever since, I think it was the Jake Arrieta incident, the clubhouse has been locked up tight. No one has said a thing. There has been, no one has said anything. And we only have like two or three instances of any player saying anything about their own personal feelings about what's happening in the clubhouse this year.
Yeah, that's very true.
That is obviously all, I think that's all Kapler saying. Everything stays here.
And that's
fine if that's how you want to do it, but you have to recognize that it also denies the public information about things. Not that we deserve it, not that everyone has to talk to a beat writer. I've said it before, beat writers are the ones that get really torqued up and bent out of shape when, you know, a player decides I'm not going to talk to the media. But I would rather them say we're not talking to the media than say nothing. This is like, so we're going to go through this. So he starts out by saying, I think that's a really good question.
Thanks.
Agree. Well, I'm thinking about it every day. I'm sure you are. I'm looking for opportunities to use JP Crawford. He's so talented, and I think we're going to be depending on him so much in the future that we want to get him looks. That is what, then he goes on the other side. Literally, these are the two sides of his own personal argument. JP Crawford is, he says he's talented, and we're going to be depending on him in the future, and we want to get him looks. On the other side, there are some old dudes and a guy who's been struggling that we want to put out there.
That's where it goes, like, completely off the rails. Like, he's so talented, and I think we're going to be depending on him so much in the future that we want to get him looks. Like, yeah, okay, good. This is a great time to do that, because the team is probably not going to be any sort of postseason threat. You're just playing out the stretch. That's what this season has been for all along, was to see what you had in these young players. And he's been the Phillies' top prospect for how many years? So, yeah, this was a great time to get him out there, see what he can do, get people excited that maybe next year won't go as shittily as this. And then the next sentence, yeah, he says, but on the other hand, we got to give the guy hitting .228 all year his chance, even though he's played in 133 games. We got to give Asdrubal Cabrera his chance. Why? Why are you required to give Asdrubal Cabrera his chance? Is he going to be on the team next year? Was he acquired to play over J.P. Crawford? No, he was acquired because the middle of the lineup wasn't able to hit the ball. Then he came here and he wasn't able to hit the ball either. I don't know why that's like a requirement that we get him on the field. Franco is coming back. Okay, that makes sense, because Michael Franco's actually had like a decent year, and seeing his development was also a big part of 2018 as well. Cesar Hernandez has not been playing well either, and just saying, well, he's our leadoff hitter tonight and an important part of our offense. I don't know. It's just so all vague, not statistically backed words, just saying things like important, really good. We acquired him to play. Like, that's just aren't reasons. Those aren't answers. They're just
Cesar Hernandez is hitting 258 this year, which is bad for a leadoff hitter. That's not what you want. I'm looking at his splits right now. I mean, he's been doing better of late. 400 average in the last 7 days, 306 in the last 14. Those are what you want to see. On base of over 350, slugging of 400. It's good. Like, those are the numbers you want to see. But let me just take a quick look. Let me see. His July was atrocious. He hit 215 in August. I have to wonder many times he let off in August. Like, I bet it's really frustrating. Like, that thing about Cesar Hernandez was frustrating to hear. Like, it's hard for Crawford to earn anything if he's not starting.
At the end of the day, all of those were listed as reasons that J.P. Crawford wouldn't play, and none of them were really reasons why J.P. Crawford couldn't play. You know what I mean? And that goes back to my previous argument of, well, he's not playing because he can't hit. None of those guys have, barring Franco, whose position J.P. Crawford wouldn't ideally be playing anyway, none of those guys have played so well this season that they would negate giving J.P. Crawford a chance. We're not even talking about, like, starting him all the time. He had to, like, escape from, like, a trap in order to play in very small parts of a doubleheader yesterday. Like, we're just talking about giving him a bat instead of letting Pedro Florimond pinch hit the other day. Like, what's the idea behind that? Like, that's not even taking up somebody's job. That's just giving him a shot, giving him some breath, like letting him breathe, for God's sake.
Like, the thing that Ben Harris bolded, the section he bolded, is the thing that we need to look out for, because we're entering the last few weeks of the season. The Phillies are 6.5 back right now, 6.5 games behind the Braves. That is the biggest lead that the Braves have had all season. The Phillies have never been this far back at any point this year. And they're getting to the point where they won't be able to make it up. So here's the quote. So it's not as easy as we want to get JP a look and let's just put him in the lineup. It's more, does he give us our best chance to win tonight? And if not, how can we deploy him off the bench? And do we get to that situation? Now, Ben Harris made a really good point and says, and do we get to that situation part says to him, we may never get that desperate, which is exactly as it reads.
Right. That's such a scary little addendum on that sentence. Like, do we get to that situation? Like, does a report about a comet streaking towards the stadium reach us in time for us to go, fuck it, give JP an at bat? That's really bizarre. And does he give us our best chance to win tonight? This team needs to really understand that winning really isn't the primary goal here anymore for this
season. I'm trying to figure out what point are they going to realize that? What are they going to stop acting like winning the division or the wild card or anything?
That's not going to happen.
Point. But they have to. Like, this is, does he give us our best chance to win tonight? Well, no, but putting Asdrubal Cabrera in there also doesn't give us our best chance to win. So
you can't tell me starting Carlos Santana at third base gives you your best chance to win.
At third base. I can't with this team. It's not even with this team, with Gabe Kapler and the way he's doing this. It's really bothering me a lot, the way he's doing it, the way he's justifying his decisions to the public. Like,
this team, like, as you as you put it earlier in the season, this team punted on defense for the remainder of the season much earlier than this, and that becomes very clear when they put out a lineup that has Carlos Santana at third base and leading off, and Justin Bour playing first base and Rhys Hoskins in left field. You're trying to put three slugging first basemen on the field or in your lineup at the same time. And obviously he's done things like yesterday pinch run for Justin Bour with Scott Kingery after two at bats, after he got on base. I mean, that's Gabe Kapler's, like, dreamland right there. That's his wheelhouse. Like, being okay, we got that guy did his job and got on base. Now it's time for this guy who's better at being on base to come into the game. Like, yeah. And what happened? I mean, there was a double play and then completely nullified all those moves anyway.
Yep.
But you can't tell me, like, when you're talking about give our team the best chance to win, and you're basically giving up on one entire component of baseball, I don't think this team has a great chance to win from the get-go. And that's why winning at this point shouldn't be the objective. Let's talk about getting players who might be here next year more playing time so they can develop, get people more excited, do something interesting, watch JP Crawford make a sliding stop on a baseball, get a couple of hits, and then go into next season not wondering what the hell's going on with this team, you know?
One thing I want to mention before we move on from this is that there was some stuff that Keith Law, who I take everything he says with a boulder-sized grain of salt, but he mentioned something that Philly's coaches have lost all confidence in Crawford, and that it's an effort issue. John Stolness talked about this in his excellent piece about Crawford on The Good Fight. Please read it. It's very good. It talks a lot about some of the things that we've said today, only probably calmer and in an easier to follow fashion if you're looking for a quick way to consume it. It's related to the Phillies clubhouse. No one saying anything about anything, because I feel like somewhere else we would have heard, like, he's not playing because we're not satisfied with what he's doing. Like, an honest answer about what he's doing, about the deal, why we're not seeing the best prospect the Phillies have. You know, for a number of years, he was the top-rated Phillies prospect. I think in another club, we would see that. I don't know I don't think it should be portrayed as, being negative about the player or, throwing someone under the bus. It's just honesty. And granted, baseball teams don't necessarily owe us that, but we also don't owe them our viewership, our money, our merchandise money. We don't owe them anything either. So it would be nice to see a little bit of honesty, I think, from Gabe Kapler and from the Phillies about these players, because this is not the year that, it's better than the year we all envisioned, but I think we all envisioned a year where it was a little bit steadier and there wasn't a big spike in the middle where everyone's like, yeah, we're going to the playoffs. Yeah,
I think at the end of the season, something comes out that perhaps expands on that idea. What exactly JP Crawford did if that is the case, what he did to create that lack of confidence, because it's not just nothing. Because again, this is the team's top prospect. This is their only pure shortstop. This is there has to be a bigger reason than just that, and there clearly is one. And whether or not we ever know it, I guess that's what you're saying. That's the problem. But it does. It becomes like a problem for fans moving forward when you see a team that's just like, well, we gave up on this guy. We never said why, but we did. And you just let fans go, oh, well, he didn't hit. But it doesn't take that in-depth of a look at the situation to realize that something else is going on here. It must be, because he's not just not getting playing time. Like, he's not just not getting starts. He's not getting at-bats. Like, he's with the team, but they're choosing not to play him. That's like way different from like stashing him in the minors, where at least he's still playing in the International League playoffs. It's something else is going on, and there's a chance that we'll possibly know at the end of the season when the manhole covers all explode off this mess,
and everyone gets to spend some time with themselves and not in Gabe Kapler's clubhouse every day.
Yeah. So, and it's a shame. It is, like maybe we don't, since we don't know, maybe there's some fault on JP Crawford. Maybe there's more fault on the organization. I mean, when you don't know, all you can do is speculate and no one's giving an answer. So here we are.
So I have some breaking news. The Phillies have fired four of their minor league hitting instructors.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Tracy, Frank Cacciatore. Delicious. Sal Rende and John Mizorak. Apparently they were all on expiring contracts. This is sort of all in the vein of, Joe Jordan leaving, slash preventing himself from getting fired by this administration that clearly isn't interested in what he's doing anymore. But the interesting thing from the story I'm reading is Jim Salisbury, good man, good reporter. The departures of Jordan and Tracy can coincide with Rhys Hoskins becoming the first Philly since Ryan Howard in 2011 to hit 30 home runs. Hoskins has credited Jordan and Tracy for suggesting the leg kick that he says changed his career 4 years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is all interesting. You know, I just
drama.
I don't know what they're doing. That's my biggest problem with the Phillies. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know where they're headed. I don't know what their vision is for what this team should look like. They haven't shared that with fans. I want to know what, you know, not just Gabe Kapler. We know what Gabe Kapler cannot stop talking. Matt Klentak needs to talk. I want to find out what he and Andy McPhail think the vision is for this team in the future, how they want it to look, where they envision people going. Like, they all better be doing end of season press conferences, because I will watch them and I will actually report on what's in them, because someone has to say something, especially given that the season has ended so disastrously.
My guess would be that nothing's going to happen before the end of the season. I think they're just going to limp to the end here, drag this mess of a team behind them to the finish line. And then the potential will exist that, times like that will have. Obviously, yeah, you're right. There's going to be a bunch of press conferences. Whether those are ambiguously worded just word salads, we'll see. But at the same time, you know, that's the best chance right now for any answers to questions like these, because, yeah, again, it's painfully obvious to anyone watching that there's stuff going on behind the scenes here, that there's maybe a power struggle, philosophical differences. And it's a shame they like entered the season like that, because Gabe Kapler was such a dramatic hire from outside the organization, something the Phillies weren't known for doing, a more statistical oriented manager, which is something the Phillies weren't known for doing. That goes for Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail as well. They mentioned that there would be a more modernization of evaluation when they both joined the organization. But if there were such staunch differences to that when they were hired, you know, that's obviously a problem. Or maybe that developed over time, like, oh, wow, this is way too much than what I was told we were going to go through as far as like analytics. And I don't want to have to rely on this as religiously as some of these guys plan to. You know, it's a mess, and it was never going to, if that's how crazy things were behind the scenes, then yeah, this team was never going to be as successful as they looked for part of the season. That's more a testament to like the players, maybe the players' natural talent is high enough that like even through all of that, they were able to just get one fist through the dirt and feel the daylight and just be like, oh my God, we did it. Like, we pushed into first place just against all odds. You know, this team's got its collective parking brake on, and we were still able to floor it into first place before, you know, everything exploded.
Yeah. It's a miracle, like, looking at what this team looks like now, how they've been playing, how atrocious and depressing and soul-crushing it can be to watch two games yesterday where they lost in different pathetic ways. It's a miracle in a way that they had such a stretch in the middle of the season where they were able to take advantage of the Braves stumbling and, you know, be in first place for any amount of time. You know, we forget that this is kind of what baseball is. I think we just would like it to be not even less frustrating, but frustrating in a different way. Frustrating, I would rather it just be, wow, the players are in slumps and this is terrible, rather than being like, why are these guys on the team? Why are they playing all the time? Why is this dude playing instead of this dude? I would rather the frustration be based in the player's performance, I think.
Oh, definitely. Rather than, like, why is that young player still screwing up in that way? Like, I can't wait till he figures that out and becomes more effective. And then, you know,
because there's hope in that.
Right.
There's positivity and hope for the future in that. In this stuff, it's positional. It's where he's putting guys, who's pinch hitting. And that's not stuff you can have hope that's really going to change, because this is just the way he's doing it.
Yeah. Our debates aren't about, oh, do you think he can like cover more ground at shortstop? Our debates are over like office drama for the Phillies. Mm-hmm. That sucks.
I think that's why people are feeling so disappointed right now. And maybe not as hopeful as they could or should, because it doesn't seem to be a problem with the players. Like, we know largely who a lot of these players are. Some of them may have a future with the team, some don't, but it's a lot of how they're being used, how he's using the bullpen, and how that just fucking explodes almost every other time he tries to do it that way. You know, it's, I mean, that's really the problem. And, you know, while you can have hope that a player will improve, if a manager is doing these things and he's been doing it all year, it's either this is the way he's doing things or he's being told to do it this way.
Yeah.
And that's not something you can have hope that's really going to change.
Well,
what a great note we got, to end all this on.
We got how many games left? We got like 3 weeks left in the season.
Something like that.
2-3 weeks. So probably won't find out too much more information moving forward. I can't wait to see today's lineup and how many of the Boers and Bautistas and Cabreras are starting. But yeah, no, that's a terrific note to go out on, Liz.
Yeah. Well, we're going to skip the 93-08 season. I think we've talked enough about the Phillies.
next time we'll come back heavier on the historical component of this podcast that dwells on happier times. We haven't done this this season, but there have been moments where the 2018 Phillies have needed all of our attention.
Yeah, and soon we're going to be getting into playoff games and talking about those. That's going to be a lot of fun. I know that some of those are available to purchase on iTunes, maybe still, or available for, I'm sure, not at all illicit or illegal downloads online. I don't do that, and no one can prove it. So I think there are a lot of fun ways that me and you, Justin, and all of you listeners will be able to experience the playoffs. I think it would be interesting for us to sort of have a Twitter rewatch one night of a good game of these stairs rips one into the night game. Oh. we're getting to a point where the season is going to end. The 2018 Phillies will be able to shove them into the rear view mirror or into a box somewhere deep into our souls and just focus on the great memories of 10 years ago, because that was a fun time and the beginning of some really great times for the Phillies. So look forward to that. If you have thoughts on how you'd like us to cover the playoffs, the 2008 playoffs, please let us know. If you have thoughts on non-Phillies topics, pop culture topics you want us to talk about one of these days when we're just too depressed about the Phillies and we want to talk about anything else, please let us know. You can find me on Twitter at Liz Rocher. That's R-O-S-C-H-E-R. You can find Justin on Twitter at Justin_Klug, K-L-U-G-H. That's right, yeah. Right? Yeah. And you can find all of our work on The Good Fight. And that is it for this week. Justin, any final thoughts?
Yeah, just there's a new Dirty Inning. So if anybody is downloading our podcast, which clearly many, many of you are, it's right along with the rest of the Good Fight podcast family on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get them. Make sure to keep listening to Hittin' Season and the Dirty Inning, and throw $5 at our Patreon to get sweet, exclusive, cool bonus content.
Yes.
that pops up many, many different times throughout the week. So
actually, as we promised, we are about to sort of reorganize everything in light of our relationship with SB Nation and our sort of transition into the Good Fight podcast. We're, as we mentioned, keeping the Patreon. We're going to sort of introduce, we're going to reorganize our tiers. We're going to add a few different tiers. And so stay tuned. It should be very exciting. More exciting, exclusive, and possibly alcohol-soaked content will be headed your way.
Huzzah!
Huzzah. All right, that is it for us this week on Continued Success. We will see you again next week.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X&O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.